raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over!
The world we're alive.
Why not raise a little hay?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the Q0 Theater Cast. This is your host, Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, here with another rendition of our Get to Know the Cast series. So last time we interviewed our leading ladies, so now we're here with our leading gentlemen. I have Hugo, who's playing Algernon, and Cheyenne, who's playing Jack. Say hello to everybody.
Hey!
Hello!
We're real thankful for you to come on here, and even more thankful to have you guys in the show. We're about 2 weeks before opening, getting ready. You know, we're into longer rehearsals where we're running things in the acts. They're incredibly hilarious, good energy, everyone really playing off each other. So we want to give our audience an opportunity to get to know our performers a little bit more, you know, so they can see them more as people and not just as the clowns that they're going to be on stage. So we'll start with you, Hugo. If you can tell everybody a little bit about yourself, your theater background, kind of how you came to be a part of this production.
Yeah, so I grew up in Minnesota, and I'm small, so I can't play hockey. So instead of being on the hockey team, I decided to do musical theater when I was in eighth grade, and the show was Aladdin Jr., and I was guard number two. And I loved it. It was really fun, and I kept kind of doing it more and more, and I started acting a lot in college. You know, I was doing all those like college groups, and then after I graduated college, I moved up here to New Hampshire. And I started doing a lot of community shows on the seacoast, a little bit in the North Shore, and now I'm kind of doing some shows here in Manchester.
Were you like Caroline you were brought to New Hampshire for work, or Did you have family here, so it was purely...
It was a little bit of family, a little bit of work.
Okay.
My uncle lives in Portsmouth.
Oh, all right, great. So, glad to have you. And yourself, Cheyenne, how did you, what's your background in theater, and how'd you come to be a part of this?
Well, I'm actually relatively new to theater, so basically... Throughout high school, throughout middle school, all of that, I was mostly involved in music as performing. So I'm not new to performing per se, but theater only recently attracted my interest. I started acting last year. I was actually a grad student at Tufts, and I started doing the shows involved in the department. And then that's where I discovered that I really like this stuff, so I kept pursuing that. So now it's been a mix of school shows and community theater. And I'm actually originally from New Hampshire, so this is kind of a nice homecoming, as it were.
Oh, that's great. What instruments and type of music do you play?
I play piano, and I was involved in percussion as well in concert band. But then I sort of drifted towards theater because I enjoy sort of the physicality of it. And even, I suppose, having percussion background sort of... shows that I was into the physicality even back then, but I didn't know that I liked theater back then, so it's been a pleasant surprise.
Oh, makes sense, and yeah, we're happy to have you and happy that you've found this. Share with the people a little bit more about your characters. I don't know who wants to go first, but give them a little taste of Jack and Algernon.
All right, so I'm playing Algernon Moncrief. For those who aren't quite as familiar with the show, as I've grown to be over the past few months, Algernon Moncrief is basically the combination of high society, sort of, for lack of a better word, asshole. that's kind of key to Oscar Wilde's work. And then also the modern sort of pretty boy. And basically, he has not a care in the world, and he just likes having fun, which I think speaks to my character as a person, although hopefully I'm not quite as much of a high society asshole as Algernon is. But it's a really fun character to play because it's simultaneously all about the fun, but then also there are moments in it where I have to think, well, Algernon actually is a person and he really does have feelings as much as he hates them.
Mm. So that's been a fun challenge.
It's been a challenge to get from my mindset as a person into the mindset of, I don't have a care in the world. And then the deeper mindset of, well, I actually do. I just don't want to show it as a character.
Yeah, when he finds that thing to care about.
Right, it's layers.
Yeah, like an onion.
Yeah, like an onion.
Or a parfait.
Also a parfait.
And Cheyenne, tell us about Jack.
Well, Jack to me is an interesting character because he's very serious on the surface. And he projects this image of himself as being upright and moral and you know, in line with most of what Victorian society wants him to be. But underneath all of that, there is a man who desperately wants to just indulge in the pleasures that Algernon openly indulges in. And I think that he has created a double life for himself where he can have his cake and eat it too, although he doesn't like tea cake. And then, I feel that it's interesting for me as a person to play him, because I feel, growing older as an adult, I kind of feel that way too. I mean, I think this play is timelessly relevant, in that people have to put on sort of an air of, it's not quite like Victorian era, but people still have to put on some sort of air in public versus what they really are like in private. And sometimes I feel that way. You know, I have a silly side to myself, but then, you know, I'm also someone who has a day job and, you know, has to have this serious personality a lot of the time. So I kind of identify with Jack, especially now.
Yeah, there's that irony in the title that, you know, it's the importance of being earnest. Not only is it a play on words that they're both pretending to be somebody named Ernest, but also just the fact that in order to survive in that society, and to an extent our own society, that you have to sometimes, not necessarily lie, but I like to think of it as putting on different masks depending on who you're with, which is, you know, something us theater people are kind of used to, you know, which is where I think a lot of people can relate. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the timelessness of this piece. You know, again, it's a play that's well over 125 years at this point, where, you know, it was written, or at least originally performed, in 1895. But, you know, as we were saying, like, it still feels incredibly relevant. Like, what other aspects to you resonates, whether it's your own character or just the play in general? Like, why do you feel this is still a play that people enjoy and people find so humorous and relevant?
I think there's two things about it, right? So the first thing is, the whole show is all about images, right? So from the get-go, there's this sort of, you know, my character of Algernon is, he comes on, he's the first character who says a line, but he really is a foil to Jack, who's more the main character. So I'm presenting this opportunity of, oh, you can be like this, be completely open about, you know, how little you care, although we come to see that that's a bit of dramatic irony later and that Algernon does care. But that's contrasted with, you know, from the first time Cheyenne walks on as Jack, you can see, you know, even though Jack is, you know, pretending to be more lackadaisical, he has this stiffness to him, so he has this image both in his mind and outside of his body of who he is. And that's really relatable, I think, you know, like Cheyenne was saying. So we all have these images of ourselves we put up, be it in our day jobs, in our personal lives. And the whole premise of the show, well, not the whole premise of the show, there's a lot of, you know, fun to it. The main premise of the show is we have these images we put up. It's kind of like the Billy Joel song, The Stranger. You know, you've got your faces that you... it's been a while since I listened to that album. But, you know, you put up this image of yourself, and maybe that's not always true. And then the second thing is, it's just a funny show. Wordplay, sort of double entendre, sort of Shakespearean hidden meanings and stuff. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, Hugo hit a lot of the main points. I think I would like to add, though, that there are some themes in there that really are timeless, and I think that, like, they fit in any era. Like, there is romance to this, of course, right? I mean, it's sort of a silly romance, but at its core, both Jack and Algernon are going after women, and they're interested in romancing them, and they have sort of unconventional means of getting there, but it's still the same timeless goal that you see throughout literature. And also, there's a huge emphasis on family, and that's also, you know, reflected throughout literature all the time, that the constraints that family life can put on you, or in Jack's case, he has sort of an unconventional family, but it is still a family, and it restricts his own life, so he has to invent this whole story to get away from that. So both Algernon and Jack have families restricting them, but in different ways.
Yeah, I completely agree that, you know, they they're definitely completely different people depending on who's in the room, and definitely their family there, whether it's Algernon's Aunt Augusta, who forces him to be a little bit more mature, even if it's put on. And then same thing with Jack being in charge of Cecily. You know, he has to put an example and kind of be this parent figure to her, so also forcing him to be a little bit more mature than maybe he wants to be. And it's definitely more constant in Jack's life since he's always in charge, where Aunt Augusta only sometimes makes appearances.
Right, and I also would like to add that there's also, of course, elements of classism throughout the play, and that's also a timeless theme that you'll see throughout literature. So, you know, both Jack and Algernon are, at least in theory, part of upper society, but underneath that, they're kind of seething, and they don't like it very much, and they don't like what it does to them. So they both have different ways of escaping it.
Mm. So. Yeah, so let's shift gears and talk a little bit more about your theater background. I don't know if either who wants to start here, but you know, tell us, you know, maybe a favorite role you've played, or what. I mean, Cheyenne, you talked a little bit about, you know, really enjoying the physicality of it, but like, what draws you to a role? What type of roles do you like to play? You know, give us just an insight as to, you know, why you love the art of performing.
Throughout various plays, I've played characters that are conflicted. And I think that I find that very interesting, particularly if there's sort of a funny element to them, but also a serious one. I think Jack fits that description perfectly. But I was also, the last play I was in was called Enemy of the People. And it's actually a Henrik Ibsen play that was adapted for sort of an American audience and set in modern times. And I played a character who was actually the antagonist. And he was sort of, like, on the surface, he was evil, but he kind of had some decent motivations behind it. He actually had some, again, it's family, right? He was trying to protect his family, but he was sort of doing it in sort of a nefarious manner, I would say. So I really enjoy playing conflicted characters because it allows me to explore them and sort of experiment a lot until I find something that I like.
Hugo?
I'm thinking back on it, and my three favorite tracks I've had in shows are all in musicals, and what's weird about that is they're all in serious musicals.
Hmm.
And normally I think of musicals as being more lighthearted and straight shows as being more dramatic and heavy. And I'm, in this case, it's almost the reverse. You know, I was in Dogfight just recently over on the Seacoast, and then I was in Next to Normal and American Idiot in college, and those were both, and it sounds weird for American Idiot, those were all serious roles, or at least the characters I had.
They're heavier pieces.
They were heavier, and they were, although they were quite fun, they were less weighty.
Mm.
And now here in The Importance of Being Earnest, I'm playing Algernon, who is, he defines himself as not being serious. The whole point of the character is I'm having fun. And I think maybe what draws me to this, in addition to all these, you know, musical roles, and I think part of the reason I love musicals is I just, you know, I love singing. And, you know, being the center of attention doesn't hurt either. So I guess that's why I'm playing this character. But I think it's that there is that seriousness of being funny.
Mm.
Because Algernon doesn't take his life seriously, but he takes himself seriously.
Yeah, I can see that.
And the idea is, you know, you don't want to... I try not to play a joke as a joke, because although this show is incredibly funny and I crack up at most rehearsals, Algernon doesn't.
Mm.
He has fun, but it is serious.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it and to look at it. Are there any roles that you have your eye on in the future? You know, maybe not necessarily particular productions coming up. Like, if you could just go and be placed in any show, either of you, like, what's your dream role? Or what type of, you know, part do you want to play? Or even if it's just a specific show that you want to be in.
Well, for me, I mean, I can't sing. Not yet, anyway. I'm thinking about training, but I mean, my favorite musical has always been The Phantom of the Opera, and it's iconic, it's powerful, and it would be my dream to be the Phantom. I don't think it would ever happen, but, you know, A man can dream.
Yeah. It's a meaty role and, you know, definitely requires a good amount of training. But, you know, give it a whirl. Who knows? I don't know if I've ever seen a community production of it. I know that some high schools have done it. But, yeah, it's a big and powerful one. It's one of the Andrew Lloyd Webber pieces that I can tolerate.
Hugo. So you're going to hate my answer.
Oh, you want to be the rum-tum-tugger.
My four favorite tracks, no. Well, my four favorite tracks are in Jesus Christ Superstar.
All right, that's not so bad.
It's not terrible.
There's some okay there. I liked when Alice Cooper was in the television version of it as pilot.
We're going to have words after this.
I just like Alice Cooper.
Fair, yeah. No, I think, though, when I age into it, something I've always wanted to do. I've wanted to do this since I was in high school. I've always wanted to be Loman in Death of a Salesman.
Mm.
And it's weird because I've been
saying, you got another like 20 years on that. Yeah.
Right. I need to be able to grow hair on my chest first.
Yeah.
But I think that there's something about the meatiness of that, you know, and I guess the way I'm thinking about Algernon and also me as a person in general is, the character sort of slogan is goofing off as a serious business in my mind. But I like the idea of, well, maybe being serious is serious business too. And there's more questions that you got to ask in a heavier role like that.
That was I saw a preview performance. The Weston Playhouse's company that was going to be performing it there came to UNH. And Christopher Lloyd played Willie Loman. And he was the first time I really enjoyed that piece. I think just reading it, I once almost got into a heated argument with my directing professor when I boldly stated Arthur Miller never wrote a character that wasn't an asshole, which I still stand by that.
That's a good description of the show.
Yeah.
And that's also, in a way, a good description of Ernest, too, because everyone is such an asshole.
Yeah.
And that's where all the conflict and also the humor comes from, because we've all got our own script for how not the script of the show. Each character has their own script of how they want their day to go, and they don't line up.
Right.
Even when we really want them to, you know, there's people who have shared goals. So Cecily and Algernon have shared goals. Gwendolyn and Jack have shared goals, but they just don't fit.
Incompatible objectives, right. Which is one of my favorite acting and directing terms. Yeah. Great. Now let's kind of change to your perspective as an audience member. What type of show do you enjoy to go seek out? Like, what gets you into the theater?
Well, I mean, I sort of have mixed feelings on... Like, I've seen stuff where... can't recall off the top of my head, but stuff where there's audience participation. And I think that's a little... it's a mixed bag, because it's like... I think that people need to be comfortable in a theater, and I think that there's a certain level of you want someone to be able to immerse themselves into the world of the show, but I think that there's a line to be drawn, and I think that without some sort of good warning or something that of what you're getting yourself into, I think that it could create a negative experience for someone. So
but when done right, it's the type of thing that excites you.
Right, right. Okay. Exactly. So it's like, you know, I don't really know what the ultimate verdict on that is. Obviously, it depends from show to show.
Yeah.
But that's certainly an element that can make a show or break a show.
Yeah, we've had a couple of projects with audience participation that's definitely had its good nights and its bad nights. You know, when we did our Shaken Spear Midsummer Night's Dream, we pulled audience members up to play the fairies when they were just, you know, handed them a script and we're like, oh, we forgot to cast these parts as a joke. And they're like, you, you're playing the fairies. Read the highlighted lines.
Yeah.
You know, and some audience members laughed and enjoyed it and others were like, oh my God, get me out of here. So, you know, mixed bag. Hugo, what gets you into a theater?
This will sound rather cliche. That's because I am.
Nothing wrong with that.
But what gets me into a theater is invention.
Mm.
So I saw a production of Assassins recently. And Assassins has an orchestration. I want to say it's something around like eight pieces in the band. And this production did it with two.
Mm.
They had a piano and sometimes a violin. And the invention behind that was the band was well integrated into the show. So the framing device for Assassins is it's a carnival game. Mm. And the sound was a carnival sound. So I like the invention kind of in there. And then in another sense, reinvention. So I know the next show Q0's got coming up is Hamlet, right?
Yes.
And so we've all been to high school. I shouldn't say we have all been to high school, but many of us, you know, in our stereotypical high school English class, you know, they plop down a Shakespeare text in front of you and you get all these kids in high school, myself especially being one of them, who, you know, have never done a show in their life, or in my case, I didn't read lines because I was terrible in high school. So, you know, you get these lines in front of you and you have all these 10th graders reading out, you know, to be or not to be, that is the question.
So
and, you know, you go like in the meter, you follow the rhythm of iambic pentameter, and it's boring and you don't understand it.
Mm.
And so I've recently started seeing more Shakespeare and I've gone from hating it to loving it.
Mm.
Because when you take Shakespeare and you read it, for lack of a better word, correctly.
Yeah, you need to have the dramatic action behind it. You gotta have somebody that understands the language.
It's a play.
Mm.
It's not an essay.
Mm, that's a hill I'll die on. I once heard a tale of a English professor at a nearby school that shall remain nameless. That in the English department, a teacher argued with a theater major that "Wherefore art thou, Romeo?" had to do with his location. And I've never been more upset at an English teacher. And plays should not be taught in the same manner as literature, because they're meant to be performed. You need the character action. You need a lot that's between the lines. And you're right, when you just read, especially Shakespeare on the page, you miss the puns. You miss the wordplay. You need to read it, and then you need to read it again, and you need to act it out. Like, when I'm doing my directorial work or my prep work on Hamlet, I have to read it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to, like, almost give each character a voice in my head so I can make sure that, like, I am reading it correctly and have a sound. So, like, you know, normally I like to try to maybe pop in my headphones and do some work at Panera or Roma Joe's, but I can't really do that with Shakespeare because otherwise I look like I'm insane.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I just recently re-binged all of Sherlock for the 7th time, I think, or something like that. And there's an actor on it who plays Jim Moriarty, who's the kind of the arch-villain of the show, and he's this evil guy on the show. And I found him, he did a production of Hamlet in London, I want to say 4 years ago. This guy's name's Andrew Scott. And I saw, you know, his to-be monologue, obviously, and then I Did Love You Once, and they're powerful because they're emotive and non-metered almost. You know, he says all the words and the words have an inherent rhythm to them, but it's not prescriptive.
Mm.
You know, he feels the rhythm of it and he uses it to influence the thought process rather than to drive the pattern of his speech. And so it's stuff like that that really gets me excited. You know, feeling the lines being felt by the actor rather than being delivered by the actor.
Mm.
Hello, Q0 fans. Q0 business advisor and performer Jake Ranlett here, interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast to talk about Q0 sponsorship and membership. As I'm sure you know, theater is really expensive, and we cannot survive on ticket sales alone, which is why we have these two awesome programs that not only allow Q0 to continue to revolutionize the performing arts scene in New Hampshire, but has incredible benefits for you as well. Sponsors get their name and logo in our playbill, on our posters, mentioned in our podcasts, listed on our press releases, and so much more. We go out of our way to make sure everyone knows about you and thanks you for helping make Q0 possible. We also have our membership program for individuals who want a little bit more bang for their buck and a lot more Q0 in their lives. we have 10 different levels of membership, starting as low as $2 a month. Every level of membership comes with awesome perks, such as early access to the Q0 Theater cast, discounts on tickets and merchandise, exclusive behind-the-scenes video content, the ability to read our new works blog, and so much more. The more you give, the more you get. If you want to be a vital part of the Q0 revolution, head on over to czthreater.com and click the Support CZT link to become a sponsor or a member today. And now, back to the podcast.
I like that. And I kind of want to jump off of something you were talking about being like invention and freshness, because that's really important to Q0's mission, is new and challenging. So I like to ask this of a lot of people. What's something that you feel, again, like I do feel that there's a lot of good theater in the area, but I do feel that there's a lot of sameness to the type of shows being presented in our area. So like, what's something you either feel that theater in our area needs more of or has none of and needs to start having, or what would you like to see more of in like the next 5 years in the Southern New Hampshire, Greater Merrimack Valley area, if you could name one thing?
Yeah, so I have a, I'll plug another company here, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
But I have a couple friends who recently produced an original musical. It's called Some Holiday.
That was Dive-In Productions we've plugged Dive-In on the show before.
Oh, good. Because they're great people.
Yeah, they are.
And they did this production called Some Holiday. It's coming back to the Hat Box, I want to say, in July. I don't know.
That sounds right.
But it's a really, I mean, other than it's a great score and thematically a very good show, a solid show, and you know, it asks some serious questions, it at least points out to me that there is availability for more original work in specifically community theater. Because, you know, the stereotypical community theater, and, you know, there is absolutely a place for this. I don't mean to denigrate by any means. The stereotypical community theater is, you know, I just did a production of Music Man. It was a fun show. It was a good show. It was down the street here in Manchester. And it was, you know, 40, 50 people doing Music Man. And that's, you know, it's really fun. And I'm glad that there is that sort of old guard community theater standby. But, you know, seeing this production, it just said to me, oh, well, there's, you know, we see new shows, well, less and less on Broadway now. But historically, you know, Broadway always has original works.
Yeah.
By known authors. But just because you don't have a knighthood and seven middle names doesn't mean you can't be a really good theater writer.
Mm.
And I'm excited to see more of that coming up in specifically in the community theater circles, but just in New Hampshire, other areas than the West End and Broadway.
Right, definitely. And I mean, to all those, you know, theater producers out there, if you look at the public box office numbers that they'll put out there, the things that have been doing better on Broadway have been the things that have been taking risks and a little bit more out of a normal thing. Your Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, Fun Home, whereas your jukebox musicals and your non-innovative revivals have not been drawing the numbers they normally would, because I feel there is this growing younger theater populace, and it's no longer this upper middle class baby boomer thing. There's theater for everybody. And so, you know, theaters, take a risk. You know, we really appreciate it. I love that Dive In, you know, is producing both original work and unique takes on things. I love that, like, Actor Singers has their summer fringe show where they do something they would never do on the main stage. And I really encourage other groups to, you know, step outside your comfort zone. One of my, I can't remember who originally said it, but it was my acting professor that always brought it up, that the comfort zone is where art goes to die.
And I really like to live that way. Cheyenne, what would you like to see more of in the area?
Well, something that, from my last experience and being in Enemy of the People, that sort of inspired me to think about how much theater is out there in the world that we haven't really explored yet, right? Because I think that it might be a lot to ask audiences to get into a foreign language play, but maybe there could be a bridge. And I think that, like, in the case of that play, it was adapted in such a way that was relatable, and then it made me want to read the original. I don't speak Danish, so it wasn't, but I got a hold of the original English translation of it, which was vastly different, and it was it really got me into that sort of thing. So I think that there is a lot of potential to be explored, and I think that perhaps as we see more people trying to adapt that and adapt it by keeping the spirit of the play, but also making it accessible to people around here, it would be a good step towards enhancing the theater experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I'm going to rapid fire just a few questions because I know we are running, not long, but we are running a little late here, and I just don't want the alarm to end this podcast prematurely because I believe it'll start going off eventually. Just real quick, final thoughts on Ernest, like changing gears. Like if you could sell this show on one thing that we might not have covered, why should people come see either, you know, specifically the Q0 Theater Company production of The Importance of Being Ernest? Playing February 28th through March 1st in Manchester.
Oscar Wilde is just so witty, and it's such a, I mean, some people consider this his greatest work, but you know, regardless, any exposure you can have to his work is just, it's a must see. And I think that if you want to sort of get at the heart of who Oscar Wilde was as a person, you should see this show, and you should specifically pay attention to Algernon, because I do think he embodies a lot of Oscar Wilde's most interesting qualities. And I think he really, when you read this play, you really see that he put his heart and soul into creating that character.
Mm. Yeah, I think Cheyenne hit the nail on the head, and not just because he paid my character a compliment. but I think the only thing I would add is, this show is incredible. The script, I'll say, is incredibly funny. You know, from start to finish, I don't think there's a single page without a joke on it. And that's to say nothing of just the witty, kind of bantersome, I don't know if that's a word, but it is now, feeling of the dialogue. On top of that, especially through Dan's direction and just, you know, our other actors, you know, Bruce, Emily, everyone in this cast is very funny. I just forgot four names. It's okay, though. Everyone in this cast is very smart about physical comedy and timing. So, you know, we've got the funny script. Then we've got the timing by, you know, Emily, Bruce, and then these people.
Laura, Caroline, Keith, Jude.
Right, exactly. You know, these people that I just saw half hour ago. And I don't know their names. We've got the timing, we've got the funny script, and then we've got the physical comedy. And I genuinely think the physical comedy, not to toot our own horns, is the funniest part of the show. Because we've got all the timing, and we've got all the script. And then there's just other things that are happening the whole time. If you covered your ears, you would still laugh.
Yes. Well, thanks, guys, for sitting down and chatting with me. It's been a delight to get to know you guys a little bit more. I hope our audience agrees. So one final time, The Importance of Being Ernest opens February 28th, playing at the Creva Academy Public Charter School. Tickets are on sale now at cztheater.com. Also, make sure you check out, we've got in both our public newsletter and our members' exclusive insider newsletter, where you can learn all sorts of fun things, like our Hamlet auditions coming up on March 8th and 10th, more information about our world record attempt, and some other super secret side projects that are in development that you're not going to want to miss. So one last time, this is Artistic Director Dan Pelletier. And as we always say, support local theater and join the revolution.